good evening. You are listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Of course, we're found on www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's our new domain, and that's our new webpage. Check it out. The guys have gone through a lot of work for that. On satellite, virtual channel W3957, and at kickradio.com, and whoever else decides to pick us up, welcome. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. Tonight, former FBI agent, president of Van Zandt and Associates, and author of the book Facing Down Evil, Clint Van Zandt will be here. We're going to talk about that sad McCann case. You know, the family from Britain that's accused in Portugal of the disappearance and the death of the daughter. Does this sound familiar? Does it sound like the Ramsey case? After that, Stephanie Good will be here. She's a New York Times bestselling author of several books, and we're here to talk about Mike Nifon. Of course, Stephanie wrote the book A Rush to Injustice, and we're going to talk about Mike Nifon, that disgraced DA down in Durham County, and the 24-hour jail sentence that he served. After that, Jackie Hollander will be here. Remember her? She was the one that was raped, allegedly, by James Brown, but she wasn't able to bring her court case to civil court because of a statute of limitations. Well, Jackie has some interesting information about that tonight. In fact, it's some fantastic information. She's a proponent and a champion for rape victims' rights, and she'll be here. Then John Lieberman will be here from America's Most Wanted to talk about a capture and to talk about somebody they're still looking for. That's tonight here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. It's great to have you. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. My next guest wrote this. Similarities between Madeleine McCann and the JonBenet Ramsey case. Dr. Kate McCann stared out the window of the plane flying her, her husband, and two of the three children from Portugal to their home in Great Britain. Some on board suggested that her expression indicated her sadness in leaving Portugal without her precious daughter, Madeleine, while others cynically suggested she was happy to be escaping the pressures of being named as a suspect. I thought I'd bring on Clint Van Zandt tonight to talk about that case and the similarities between that and the Ramsey case. Are we seeing that again? Clint, it's always nice to have you.
Thank you, Dana. Good to be with you.
Now, am I blowing this out of proportion a bit, or do we see a similarity in these two investigations?
Well, we do. I mean, the thing is, so we've seen what purports to be the end of the Ramsey investigation. Obviously, we're over a decade later while we're still in the throes of the initial investigation on Madeleine. You know, my challenge is separating the wheat from the chaff, separating what the police have, you know, here, I hate to sound like a defense attorney after 25 years as an FBI agent, but, you know, I really got to separate what the police have intentionally planted in the media trying to put pressure on the McCanns to what we really know is hardcore linking forensic evidence for which there's no other explanation other than the McCanns had something to do with the death of their own daughter. I haven't seen that yet, and, you know, as much as the Portuguese police have leaked it to the tabloids, and the tabloids have just ran crazy between Great Britain and Portugal, you and I know that, you know, speculators speculate and investigators investigate. And I think the jury, as far as I'm concerned, the investigative jury is still out until we see the evidence that irrefutably links the McCanns to the death of their daughter.
How fair is it for a case like this to be, and then we'll talk about the police perspective in a bit. Well, let's talk about the perspective of the family and those of us that are watching it to see this case brought out in the media. Like the Ramsey case, this one is going to be as big, if not bigger, as this keeps breaking day after day. How fair is that?
Well, you know, probably the only case that's received any more attention than this in Great Britain is the death of Princess Diana.
Right.
I mean, this young missing or dead girl, depending on what theory you listen to, has probably had more media exposure face-wise, either on the website with tens of millions of hits through soccer matches and others. This little girl's probably got one of the more well-known faces in the world. So I guess I've never thought it's fair, as if there is a fairness standard, that it's fair that law enforcement should try to prosecute their case through the media. I think it's their responsibility to, you know, really, media aside, go out and investigate the case. Don't worry about how the media plays out one way or the other. And if you've got the case, take it to court. And that's what I didn't see happen. As far as I'm concerned, again, what I know is what I've read and talked to officers who have knowledge of what's going on in the case, is that the Portuguese authorities have really dropped the ball on this. Things that you and I would have done with our respective forces on the first day or two took the Portuguese sometimes a month to 2 months to get in. I mean, they didn't even allow the British authorities to come over and be of assistance for a couple of months. And, for example, searching the forensically searching the room that Madeline had either been kidnapped from or died in, again, depending who you listen to, they're going back months later and doing a forensic exam. Well, dozens, if not hundreds, of people, maids and other residents, have been in and out of that room. So, you know, there is so much to question here, and my parallel with the JonBenet Ramsey case is, again, there are things you have to do the first hour, the first couple hours, the first day, and it's like a train going past a watering station. Once you pass that watering station, you're on down the track. There's no backing up. You have to keep going. And investigatively, I see that there were things that should have been done, that could have been done, that weren't been done, and I don't know how the authorities can make up for that lack of it, except at this place in juncture to come up with now, and they may be right. They may be right, Dan. They may be 100% right, and I want to give them that benefit of the doubt, too, where the prevailing theory right now is that the McCanns wanted to go out that night, that their daughter was either acting up, she wasn't sleeping, whatever it was, that the two McCanns are medical doctors. They give each other high fives. They say, we know what we're doing. They give their three-going-on-four-year-old daughter a sedative. She expires from that sedative. The parents go, oh, my God, what are we going to do if it's found out that we did this? We'll be charged with manslaughter. They'll take our two children away. They'll take our medical licenses away. We'll both go to prison. Our families are destroyed. Our lives are destroyed. Therefore, we will engage in one of the more massive cover-ups since James Bond and be able to pull it off as two doctors who have no idea how to pull something like this off. Could it have happened? Yes, it could have, because, you know, that's what the cops have got to take a look at. But there's a lot of stars that have to line up for the McCanns to have pulled this off. And I don't see the stars all lined up right now.
Let's talk a little bit about public's perception of the investigation. We're talking about the parallel between the JonBenet Ramsey investigation, this one, and I'm going to bring up Natalie Holloway now, because I think all three have lack of investigation written all over them. The public sees this. They see it on the media every day. The public's confidence in the police is going to go down. What can we do about it, and is that being portrayed fairly?
Well, this is one of these things that come out in the wash, you know. I think all said and done, the Portuguese police have now turned this case over to the prosecutor. And from what I'm hearing, that at least Kate McCann is going to be indicted, or the prosecutor is going to carry a case forward, whatever the Portuguese term is. They're going to carry a case forward and pursue charging Dr. Kate McCann with manslaughter. If they've got the evidence to support it, to back it up and prove it, like one of the things I've heard, you probably you have too, Dana, is that for the last 30, 45 days, not only have they had a 24/7 surveillance on both husband and wife, but they've also secreted listening devices in various places. And one can only imagine in the apartment they were living in, perhaps in the bedroom they were sleeping in, perhaps in the car they were driving, trying to pick up pillow talk. And the strategy, should that be the case, the strategy would have been put pressure on them through the media, make them think that things are going on, so they would have to discuss it amongst themselves, and then the police would be in a position, hopefully with court-ordered wiretaps and listening devices, to be able to listen and see what's going on. Yeah.
10 minutes.
Okay. And so, if they have that evidence, if they have not only linking physical evidence that is irrefutable, but pillow talk between husband and wife that said, gee, what a shame we killed our daughter. I'm really sorry we did this. Then, you know, the police have got a case. But short of something like that, what I would hate as a former law enforcement officer to see is for the police at the 11th hour to come up with the parents because they couldn't come up with anybody else.
Right.
To quasi trump up a case against them and then to dump it on the prosecutor and say, here it is, you make it or break it. And in the meantime, they've put so much pressure on the McCanns, they've ran them out of Portugal and sent them home. And then everybody gives each other a high five. You know, the analogy you make with the Arubin case concerning Natalie Holloway, where eventually all the Arubins wanted was for Beth Holloway Twitty to go home
right.
and quit affecting tourism. And there are some that suggest that was the case in Portugal right now, too. So, you know, I can draw a line down the middle of a piece of paper right now and say facts that support the McCanns having something to do with their daughter's demise and facts that suggest it took place somewhere else. And I'm pretty evenly balanced right now, and what I'm waiting for is the hardcore evidence that the police say they have that will link her irrefutably. And it's got to be something more than just we found her DNA in the rental car that you rented 25 days after she went missing. Because I could answer that as a defense attorney saying, well, we had her clothes in the back seat, we had our children, her dolls and things, everything she had touched, so therefore skin cells, hair, fibers, perhaps blood from a bloody knee that was on a T-shirt or something, all of that could have sloughed off and could have transferred to the back seat. So it's going to have to be something more than just transfer of physical evidence to link them to the death of their child.
Got about a minute left, Clint. There's no one that's on TV more than you are with these high-profile cases. The public craves it. The public wants to know what's going on. What's your comment about that? You know, we hate to see these things happen, but it gets to be more and more and more every day.
Well, you know, I think the public lives somewhat vicariously through these cases. I mean, we want to know, here's an attractive couple, husband and wife, medical doctors, beautiful little children, and somebody snatches their child. It's another JonBenet Ramsey. It's another Natalie Holloway. Because I think we look at these cases and we say that could be number one. That could be our child or our family too. And then number two, we want to know why. How could something like this happen? You know, we all have indicted the McCanns for leaving their children in the apartment room by themselves without supervision. As it turns out, the three other couples that were there with them also had children, also had left their children in the individual rooms by themselves, too. So is this a predator who singled out Madeline McCann out of all the other children that was laying there? Were they able to successfully pull that off? And the public is continuing to demand answers. We think we can help. We think if we understand and we help, that's why we've had so many eyewitness reports all around the world of sightings of Madeline McCann,
exactly.
All so far, which have proven to be erroneous. Not, I don't think, because people are making it up, but because they want to help.
Yep.
You and I know eyewitness identification is probably the worst there is, but we go with it if we don't have anything else. Anything else has got to be linking physical evidence, and that's what I'm still waiting for in this case.
Retired FBI agent, president of Van Zandt & Associates, and author of that great book, Facing Down Evil, Clint Van Zandt, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Dana.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye. We'll be right back in a minute with Jackie Hollander talking about rape victims' rights. You are listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. We're at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. We're on satellite virtual channel W3957, kickradio.com, and wherever else you can find us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. Jackie Hollander is back. She is a rape victims' rights advocate. She is a rape victim. Someone who came up against a statute of limitations when it came to bringing a case to court, whether it's civil court or whatever. Jackie has been a frequent guest on the program, and it's great to have her back because she has some good news. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm great. Nice to have you back on the show. This evening, you and I talked this afternoon briefly. Since I had you on the air last, you've got some good news.
The balloons are popping. The confetti is falling today. And Illinois is celebrating.
Fantastic. Tell us about it.
HB 1462, Governor Rod Blagojevich signed the bill today. It is the first time ever in the United States this bill has ever existed. And it suspends the statute of limitations for all rape victims who have been harassed and threatened and intimidated, so that now we don't have the two-year statute like what I went up against James Brown.
Well, that's fantastic news. And just how crazy was it to have that statute of limitations in the first place?
Hard to believe it exists in the United States, period. Didn't really know that it was a roadblock until, of course, I took James Brown to court.
Mm-hmm. Now, that whole procedure took you how long to find out that you weren't going to get anywhere with it?
We argued the equitable estoppel, which is what this bill is going to be, mm-hmm. from the harassment intimidation. When we got into the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, we basically realized then that there was no place in the United States that could help us. There was nothing there because it was a precedented case. And we realized then we had a tough road to hoe there.
You know, not only as a victim, and then coming back and having to relive, I'm not sure if that's a fair term or not.
Oh, it definitely is.
But to relive the nightmare that you've gone through and other rape victims have gone through, and then to run into roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. This bill being signed has got to be a godsend for you. Tell us about the cooperation that you got from the government and how it led to this signing.
You know, I guess God, I am a very blessed person, Dana. The Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Violence, they're called ICASA, if you look them up on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
They were my, like, I guess, after I keep saying I was like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz, because I was spinning around somewhere in Oz for 19 years and just exhausted. And, you know, they were like the beacon waiting for me, and exhausted I went to them, and they immediately saw my lawsuit, knew I was going to the United States Supreme Court, and just backed me all the way, me and my lawyer. And then, you know, said, hey, let's change the law. And, of course, anytime someone tells you, hey, let's change the law, you kind of look up and go, gee, this is not going to be an easy adventure. But they actually escorted me. They actually saw that the bill was written and, you know, took me to the in front of the legislature and the Senate, and these people are wonderful. They're a godsend, and today their party hat's blowing across the state of Illinois.
Well, we can't help victims of sexual assault or rape. I'm not sure those victims and victims of crime and children, I'm not sure who we can help. Now, this whole bill, I know we only have, well, about 9 minutes left here, and we can't probably explain it all, but if you could encapsulate it for me a little bit as far as what it can do now for those rape victims.
Anybody in the state of Illinois that gets raped, and let's say the rapist says to them, okay, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill your family, and this victim stays quiet, mm-hmm. like I did,
right.
Okay? If quiet for, let's say, 15 years, and they have the evidence, they now can go into any, you know, into any court in Illinois, and the doors are open to them. There is no longer a two-year statute of limitations for them.
The intimidation process, I think, is an important one, because, you know, we watch movies on TV, those of us that have been in law enforcement or public service where we deal with victims are aware of the fact that the intimidation factor really never goes away. It's something that's with you for your whole life.
Oh, yeah.
This is not only a victory for that, but it's a victory for not only the victims but the victims' families, because those wives, daughters, mothers, whoever, are going home and living with this nightmare, and the family lives with it. That's an interesting perspective we don't hear much of, how the family copes with a loved one who has been raped.
The family, it doesn't just affect families. It affects friends.
Right.
It affects relatives. It affects everybody. I mean, my whole life now, everybody that knows me is affected by the James Brown case. So, I mean, it's, you know, it just, it goes on and on and on, even to the way I met you.
Right.
It was because of the James Brown case. So, yes, a rape victim affects all the victim affects everybody, and the perpetrator causes it. And I think it was interesting that Governor Rod Blagojevich released this today. His statement says, rape victims should have all the time they need under the law to bring civil charges against their attackers.
Yep.
And to seek justice and compensation. And just as importantly, this law will help deter perpetrators from harassing their victims to keep them from bringing a civil lawsuit. That came from my governor today, attached with HB 1462.
The good thing about bills like this, Jackie, is that other states pick up on this. Is your mission done, or are you going to continue on with other states?
I'm going to continue on. I actually spoke to the Cumbie Center in South Aiken, South Carolina this evening. And, of course, that's the state where Mr. Brown hailed from, and a lot of the abuse on some of the victims down there. And I think they're going to be the next one to stand up and take HB 1462, and it may become a national law now. And I'm so excited. I had the pleasure of talking to Mr. Garrison earlier this evening, and I know he's very excited.
Well, you know, you I'm kind of lost for words here myself, because you should be very proud of the work you've done, and I know you're not one to take that sort of praise, because you did what was in your heart, what was right for others and what will help others. But Jackie, you've done a lot for a lot of people. And this may not help you sleep better at night, but, you know, I think it might a little bit, because you've won one big battle here.
This was the $106 million case today. This was the win of it all today, was to see that no other woman will ever walk in my shoes again in the state of Illinois, and to know that we're the first in the United States to ever have a law like this for rape victims. And I really just want to send a real special message out to the famed Deborah Opry, who is a lawyer. Do you mind if I do this?
Sure, go right ahead.
Deborah Opry represented James Brown and, of course, Michael Jackson, and is the basher of all victims, be you a child or be you whoever you are out there. And, Miss Opry, you made the statement that I lived in a pipe dream. And today, Miss Opry, this is the greatest pipe dream Jackie Hollander could have ever lived in or walked in. So, you know, to you.
Good for you, Jackie. Now, what can we do more in the media? Education is a big part of this, right down from victims' rights to investigating rapes to you name it. What more can we do? You know I'm on your side.
Well, if there's someone out there that knows somebody with Good Morning America or NBC, I believe that this story needs to get out tonight to these national Today shows and stuff like this, and get it out there and let them know that this is the first time ever in the United States of America, and that they need to get it out there so the victims know that this law exists, and that the people can get it out there to their state representatives and start pushing right now so that their laws can be changed. Because, hey, we did the impossible here today. We did the first step, and I mean the impossible. And so if we can do it, other states can do it. And then, guess what, Dana? Across the United States, rape victims won't be having a 2-year statute of limitation. they'll be able to wait 15 years. And guess what? Those perpetrators, they're like, today is the defense attorney's biggest nightmare. They're like right now in the state of Illinois going, oh, my God, how will we protect a rapist now?
Exactly.
You know, it's over for the rapist in the state of Illinois. I mean, you've got an open end now. You've got an open end years on them. And, you know, what's a defense attorney going to do in that? It can come back to bite him in the butt 30 years later.
Exactly. And that's the way it should be. Jackie, be proud. You've done well. And let's stay in touch.
Dana, you are a great guy. And thank you to all your listeners. And just a great show.
Okay. Take care, my dear.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
That's Jackie Hollander. 1-1 for the good guys. We'll be right back with author, New York Times bestselling author. I call her Supermom, Stephanie Good, here on The Dana Pretzer Show. Okay, we're back. This is The Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Stephanie Good is here tonight to talk about Mike Nifong. Now, you say, who's Mike Nifong? Well, you remember the Duke lacrosse scandal. Stephanie is a New York Times bestselling author of A Rush to Injustice, books like Aruba, Law School 101, and Exposed. She's an attorney, a frequent guest of my program, a popular guest on my program, one of the busiest ladies that I know. I want to talk to her a little bit about Mr. Nifong being jailed for contempt charges and only spending 24 hours in court, or in court, in jail. It's like he spent only 24 hours in court, too, learning the trade. This is a slap in the face of justice, in my opinion. I get tired of hearing about these 4-hour sentences, and this person was in court or jail for 8 hours and all that sort of stuff, and I thought I'd bring Stephanie on to talk about it. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Dana. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, that drives me crazy. And I know we've heard a lot about it with the celebrities and their 6-hour sentences, and somebody else was in for 19 hours and all that. It makes the hair in the back of my neck stand up. And then hearing Mr. Nifong, and I know he'll have some civil problems in the very near future, but a contempt rap, a prosecutor who's supposed to be setting an example, who blew this case completely, who had no evidence right from the get-go, only spends 24 hours and then has a crowd cheering for him, which I think we're all family, but that's just me, when he got out. Your thoughts?
I think it's really a miscarriage of justice, to be honest with you. I think it makes a mockery of the justice system.
Yep.
You know, one day in jail means nothing. And what this guy put these three students through was just unbelievable, and their families, and the team, and the coach, you know, the amount of people that were affected by this man's rush to injustice is just unbelievable. And for him, I mean, of course, you know, we also saw his license being pulled. You know,
right.
He was disbarred. He was forced to resign. There were a lot of things that did happen to him. And some people think that he just is paying a big price for this. I personally think that he deserves everything he got, and he should have gotten a lot more than that. And he may still, you know, there are still other things happening, and there still might be more lawsuits. There might be lawsuits against him and against the city of Durham, and it's just incredible.
Well, this is far from being done. I understand that. But it's the whole the crime fits the punishment, or the punishment fits the crime, whatever it is. It just seems like that these so-called high-profile cases that we see in the media, and I'm not sure if that's part of it or not, when the sentence finally does come down, and the Phil Spector trial will be interesting to see what happens, because he's as guilty as the nose on my face. And if that guy doesn't get convicted, then something's wrong. Is the media coverage, and like you just said, the license and all that kind of stuff, was this okay, you're in contempt, you're going to go to jail for 24 hours, or is this going to make Nifong popular with some sick, twisted person out there somewhere?
Well, I mean, there are always going to be people that are going to support someone like him, and I do think a lot of the people who support him are either people who know him or people who haven't followed the case closely enough to understand the magnitude of what he did. you know, and the media does play a part in some of that in glorifying certain parts of cases and not others. You know, I personally think that even the worst of the worst have followers, and there are going to be people who will follow him just as they follow Charles Manson, and, you know, and not to put them on the same level, but, you know, when you've committed such a terrible crime against people that it makes the media like this, it's so glorified in the media's eyes, and that it has to be told on a daily basis, you're going to have people that are going to look up to this guy, unfortunately, and who also are going to think they can get away with things. But, you know, that this is being done all over the place. And you see someone like Paris Hilton go to jail for a certain amount of days, you know, and some of these other people who are just being sent to jail for a matter of days for crimes that you know that other people are getting much longer sentences. It also makes it look like it's going to, you know, people can get away with things much easier.
Why process them if they're out in 24 hours? That's the part I can't understand. It would cost more money to do that. Of course, they know that the television cameras are on and they're following all of this. That could be one thing. It may not be, too. What is Nifong doing these days besides getting a lot of PR?
Well, personally, I don't know, you know, how he fills his time. I know that he's probably pretty much a broken man. You know, I'd heard that he had a lot of emotional problems long before this happened. You know, there were reports that he was bipolar and had a lot of different behavioral issues. So I'm not thinking that he's really too stable right now, considering everything that's happened to him. He's probably waiting to see what happens next, and, you know, to see whether or not they're going to bring more a civil lawsuit against him. He certainly is looking at things like obstruction of justice. It's not over. I don't believe it's over at all. And I think he's probably just sitting on the edge of his seat waiting to hear what else, you know, what other shoe is going to drop, you know.
How about federal charges, civil liberties, violations, all that sort of stuff?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning of that.
How about federal charges? These boys.
Sure. Well, the boys, you know, their constitutional rights were definitely violated. There's no question about that. And they probably will. I would think they would file a suit under Section 1983 of the U.S. Code. As far as more, you know, I don't know what that will do to Nifong at this point. There are civil lawsuits that will be filed. If they're going after Durham to make some changes, and the boys want the city to settle with them for $30 million right now, and under the provision that they pass certain resolutions. And, certain reforms in the laws there, including videotaping of the identification procedures and having some kind of a recording of grand jury proceedings, which is just unbelievable that you could have a grand jury proceeding and there's no record of it. There are no notes taken. There's no stenographer there to go back and see what the grand jury actually heard. And then the grand jurors, of course, can't go out and talk about what happened in there. So we really, really don't know what happened in the grand juror room completely. They want to have a state ombudsman to review complaints against prosecutors, which I think is also a great idea, and to intervene when, you know, the time comes, something like this happens. And independent commission should be formed about the residents who complain. You know, they had a lot of issues going on there with residents in the area that put a lot of pressure on Gottlieb to go after the kids at Duke University. And so part of this settlement would include all of these things, all these terms being met. And if they're not met, then the kids are going to file a lawsuit against the city. And the city's not prepared to pay for that kind of a lawsuit. They don't have that kind of liability coverage.
Well,
there's a lot there going on.
it'll be interesting to see how this all comes out in the wash. But as we continue on with our evening with Stephanie Good, New York Times bestselling author of A Rush to Injustice, the book Aruba, Law School 101, and Exposed. I hear you coming out with a law school, was it 102?
I don't know what it's going to be called this time. It's pretty much an update. You know, a lot has happened in the last 3 years to change what goes on in law school, and so I've been asked to update it, to revise it. I think it will definitely have a different subtitle. I'm not quite sure yet about the main title.
Law School 101.1, I don't know, something like that. I don't know if you got to see the 2020 episode here the other day where they took on something that you and I talked about a couple of weeks back, the NBC Catch a Predator series. It was interesting to see one network take on another network show. Did you get a chance to see that?
I know, I didn't. I read about it. I did not see it. And yeah, I think that's great. I've been taking on Dateline for quite a while now. And, you know, there's To Catch a Predator series. I was glad to see that.
Yeah, I found it fascinating that one network would take on the other with this whole issue. Again, you know, you cover it a lot, and you and I have covered it on the show, and you cover it in your book Exposed. But this whole predator issue is a huge one. After you're on, I've got John Lieberman from America's Most Wanted talking about a couple of sexual predators, and I know John Walsh has been on talking about this. And you've actually been there and done that. And for those that haven't heard shows in the past that you and I have discussed this, Stephanie, how important is it to dot all the I's and cross all the T's when it comes to these sorts of investigations?
Oh, you absolutely have to, and which is one reason why I started to talk about To Catch a Predator, because, you know, in the very early days, I thought that what they were doing was great because they were getting the word out to the public that this is what goes on, that these guys are on the Internet going after kids. But then, you know, I think they started to get carried away as the time, you know, moved on. They were doing more and more that fell into what I would consider, they crossed the line of entrapment. And you really can't do the things that they were doing and get away with it. If you go into a courtroom and you sit there and you see what the jurors are saying after a trial about the type of evidence that is being presented, the smallest little thing can make them change their minds about convicting somebody. And I have had it happen where defense attorneys have just torn me to shreds for something that might have been written in a profile. And I have a little girl profile, and just,
right.
just a sentence in there that it just might even include the word cyber sex, even if I say I don't want cyber sex, which is talking sexually over the Internet. They construe that as bringing up sex, enticing predators. This is what, you know, defense attorneys will just grasp at anything. And so when I see Dateline, and I see some of the chats where you watch the person who's supposed to be the little girl saying, you know, hey, come on over. Uh-huh. Hey, bring the condoms. What do you mean I'm too young? I'm not too young. And I've seen chats right on the Perverted Justice site. Those are the people that help Dateline with these To Catch a Predator stings. And I've seen some of the chats right on the sites where a guy will insist he's too old and that the girl's too young and he wouldn't be with her. And where the decoy child is actually trying to convince them that it's okay. And we just don't do that. I've worked with the FBI. We'd never do anything like that, because that little bit right there, a defense attorney's going to latch onto that and say, see, they were convincing him, they were pushing him, mm-hmm. He was not predisposed to this crime, but they convinced him and convinced him and convinced him until he finally gave in. And that's what it looks like a lot of the time on these shows. And then when you see the house surrounded by police, well, as soon as these guys know now that this is Chris Hansen and that they're on Dateline, this is a well-publicized show, they're also aware of the fact that they're not leaving. They're not going home. They're going to be arrested. So for all intents and purposes, they're in custody. They cannot leave. Now when Chris Hansen starts questioning them, they're being questioned in custody without being given the Miranda warning, because he's acting now as an agent for the police. So, the whole thing stinks. To be honest with you, it's a terrible, what they've evolved into is just disgraceful. I've been saying it. And I want to tell you that for quite a while, there were people who would not allow me to say that on the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, not...
That was because they didn't want to go up against a show like Dateline.
Yeah, well, I'll go up against a show like Dateline any time.
Well, now it seems to be acceptable. You know, I'll be honest with you, my own publicist wouldn't let me do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and because I guess it was that public perception that, hey, look at the good job these guys are doing. But what they were doing is just shooting themselves in the foot. And in some cases, the DAs weren't even prosecuting or filing the charges. And how stupid is that?
A lot of the cases. And that's because they saw what the evidence was going to look like in court.
And, the DAs are just as smart as the defense lawyers. And, you know as well as I do that when you put a case together, it's a puzzle. And you have to have all the pieces fit before you can take it. And,
absolutely.
And if you can't make those pieces fit, then you've got problems. And when it comes to sexual predators like this, especially on the Internet, and I'm going to ask you that question I ask you every time on the show, how dangerous is the Internet for Joe and Mary Sixpack's little 12-year-old girl?
It's extremely dangerous. I don't think people have a good perception of just how easy it is for these guys to go after kids. And I hear from parents all the time about this because kids are naive, number one. Number two, kids think they're invincible.
Mm-hmm.
They think that they can judge people and that they don't need their parents to tell them how to make friends and who to make friends with. I've gotten emails constantly about kids who thankfully, somebody found out they were going off to meet a guy that they had met on the Internet. It's amazing. But, you have to look back to when we were kids. A lot of the stuff our parents told us, we didn't buy into because we thought we knew more than they did. And so a lot of the kids today, they hear some of these things, but they're not really paying attention. They're not watching Dateline. They're not reading my book, Exposed. That's the thing. The parents who write to me and tell me that they've given their kids the book to read, they have a completely different outlook after. The children have a completely different outlook because I put it all out there in the book. I put the chats. I put the transcripts from the trials. I put the phone conversations I have with these guys. And the amazing thing is that a lot of the kids are recognizing these conversations because one thing about sexual predators on the Internet, they all sound the same. I mean, there are times when I'll have four or five guys that I'm chatting with at the same time, and I'll almost I laugh because they'll all be asking me the same exact questions one after the other. And it just depends on what they're looking for. But there are certain guys that are looking for, phone sex, which is, those guys I kind of get rid of quickly. Some guys are looking for cyber sex, talking on the Internet, about sex. Some guys are looking to meet. Some guys are the slave masters who are looking to be, dominant guys to little girls. And so depending on which group you're talking to, though, out of one group, you got four guys, they're all saying the same exact thing.
Yeah,
and these kids are starting to recognize this when they read things in my book. They read the chats. They see the conversations. They're saying, oh, my gosh, I talked to a guy who said those things to me. And that's the good thing about, having a resource like that out there. But you're not seeing that on Dateline.
No.
You're seeing the heavier sex talk that a lot of it is. You're seeing far into a chat where they've already covered a lot of things. What these kids really need to see is how these guys start off, how they work their way into a child's life, how they gain the trust to be able to talk about sex. And that's the part they really need to see. Yeah, kids are very vulnerable to this on all over the place. And, MySpace and AOL and Yahoo and MSN, it's all out there. Did I say that right, MSN?
I think so.
I don't have that service. There's one service out there. It starts with an M. Is that...
It's MSN.
I hope you didn't say something...
No. It's MSN, and there's Facebook is the new one. And
yeah, Facebook, too.
Oh, man. There's all sorts of things. And these sexual predators on the Internet, you don't see their face. The sexual predators that are out there that walk the streets, You know, it's such a danger in society today, whether it's the internet or on the street, whether they're working in the corner store or whatever, Stephanie. Are the laws strong enough when it comes to these sorts of vermin that walk our earth?
You know, I think that there are, some people are trying to make the laws stronger. The federal system certainly has. And, you know, they've, for instance, increased the laws just for what I do, just for the guys I talk to on the Internet. Just all they have to do is show up at a meeting with no kids, you know, involved. It's just me talking to them. They show up. The FBI grabs them. They're now looking at a minimum of 10 years in prison and a maximum of life. So, you know, the federal system is moving along. The state systems, some of them have passed, you know, certain laws that are moving along also. The biggest problem, really, I see is, number one, you know, trying to get these guys before they get the kids.
Yep.
Because you really, the laws, you know, that's a wonderful thing to do to make them stronger. And you do want to keep them in jail after they've been caught. You want to keep them in there for a very long time, if not forever. But I think the most important thing is to try to get the kids, you know, before these guys get them, to try to get to the kids and let them know, you know, what's out there and what they're getting themselves into. Because that's where I come in. That's my part of it, is trying to intercede, trying to be that kid so that no real kid is getting hurt. But I do think the laws need to be made a lot stronger, especially on the state level.
I'm curious your perception of the my first guest this evening, Clint Van Zandt, and I were talking about what we're seeing on the media as far as investigations and incompetence in investigations in the high-profile cases, the Holloway case, JonBenet Ramsey, and now with these the British couple in Portugal with their child disappearing and the forensic search that happened a month later and all this sort of stuff. Now you see the Predator series and other networks going after it, and it's making not only NBC look like, but it's making the officers look like, in some cases, bumblers. And it wonders, or it makes me wonder, the public's perception now of maybe being afraid to come forward because they think it's not going to go anywhere.
Well, yeah, that's a big risk that shows like Dateline, you know, are putting us in now. Because when people see so many others getting off and so many, because of these types of investigations, they're afraid. You know, they feel that it's a waste of time and, the other guy will do it maybe and, mm-hmm. probably, like for instance, I have people who write to me and say to me, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid to go after these guys? I mean, what if these guys come after you now? Well, you know, everybody feels that way. The general public feels that just reporting a crime, they're putting themselves into jeopardy. And, you know, it happens. I mean, it happens that people do get threatened and people do get hurt. And so there's that risk. And now when you put on top of it that these investigations are getting bungled, you know, it adds to people's reluctance to take it all seriously and to come forward. And that's, you know, when you see these cases like in Dateline where you have, say, 30 arrests, and out of 30 arrests, the prosecutors are asking for maybe 18 months, 3 to 18 months, you know, in prison for these guys and then agree to probation.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
Yeah. No, it is. And it's the prosecutorial rush to injustice. How do you like that? I'm going to use your title here
a little bit.
Because they want to clear the file. And if they can make a deal and they can clear the file, that's one less that they have to worry about. And that's wrong, just plain wrong. And it makes me sick.
Well, because these guys are repeat offenders. And these are child molesters. And these guys will not stop. So you let them back out on the street with probation. And it's only going to be a matter of time before you get them, you know, you go after them again because they've done something else. And I've seen that happen so many times just, you know, in where I live. I've seen these guys get off and just get caught again. And even on Dateline, you saw a couple of guys who kept coming back for more.
Yep. And that just shows you a fault in the system.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Stephanie Good, New York Times bestselling author of A Rush to Injustice, Aruba, Law School 101, Exposed, and soon Law School 101A, maybe. I don't know. Always good to have you on the show.
It's great to be on. Thanks a lot, Dana.
Thanks, Steph. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And this is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're on satellite W3957. On the internet at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Check out the new site. There are lots of fun things. You can hear my daily commentary, podcasts of past shows. We're on iTunes now. Lots of people can pick up the show for free. Kickradio.com. Access Communications, Channel 7. That's television. We're giving Howard Stern a run for his money and whoever else wants to pick us up. I sat down with John Lieberman from America's Most Wanted today and talked about their season premiere, which was on Saturday night, and a couple of cases that he's working on. Sit back and enjoy. Okay, we're back. If you had a chance to watch the season premiere of America's Most Wanted, you will have seen my friend, correspondent, and producer John Lieberman talking about two dirtbags, one Richard Steve Goldberg and the other one John Sarvino Shalachi. I hope I pronounced that right. One's been caught, the other one hasn't. These are two guys that need to be off the street. John Lieberman from America's Most Wanted, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Dana. Good to be back. How are you?
Nice to have you, too. Listen, let's talk a little bit about Goldberg. Tell us about him. He's been caught.
Yeah, this is a guy that's been captured. He was captured up in Montreal a few months back. This is a guy who was accused of sexually molesting a number of girls, and we've aired his case a number of times. He was on the FBI's 10 most wanted list here in the States, and we're thrilled that he is now an alumni of that list. And behind bars, and now actually has been extradited back here to the U.S. To face these very serious charges.
This seems like a no-brainer as far as the question goes, but I'll ask you as a correspondent and someone who follows this, and I know myself as a fan and as a viewer, it's so great to hear that somebody's been captured. What do you feel like as a correspondent, somebody who's worked on the case, when you hear they've got them?
It's the best part about working here. I mean, when you can call a victim or a victim's family and tell them that the person who raped their daughter or killed their mother or et cetera, that person has now been brought back into the justice system, it's an incredible feeling. It's the best part about what we do, and it's why we do it. It's why we've been successful for 20 years on the air and on the internet at AMW.com, because people out there know that they can make a difference. And in turn, we know that we can make a difference with everybody's help worldwide.
959 captures. This guy should be 960. John Sarvino Shalachi. Tell us about this guy. He's a piece of work.
You know, this guy is a convicted pedophile. He is a guy who was convicted in Texas for actually molesting and videotaping 2-year-old boys and paying them to perform in these tapes. It's one of the most disgusting cases that we've seen in a long time involving children, and he did his time. And all the while he was in jail in Texas, he began corresponding with the editor of a literary magazine up in New Hampshire, and their relationship grew, and he did the whole, you know, I'm a different person, I'm changed, like a lot of sex offenders do. And unfortunately, this family in New Hampshire, which was a man and his wife and their 5-year-old son, were naive, admittedly, and they took it hook, line, and sinker that this guy could change and that they wanted to be a help to him when he was released from prison. So what happened was, once Shalachi comes out of prison, he moves in with his family in New Hampshire. Within a matter of weeks, he disappears. And the 5-year-old in the house says that John told him to please keep his secret. And before police could get a warrant for him for aggravated sexual assault, he was on the run. And that was in 1999, frankly, and it's taken a long time, but the FBI has now decided to turn up the heat on this guy, and so have we.
Absolutely. And you and I both know that child sexual predators never change. They keep attacking their victims, and we need to get them off the street. John, 21 years for America's Most Wanted. We want to hope for another 50 years. What's next for you guys, and what cases are you working on?
You know, we just have so much in the hopper right now. We're going to experiment with some new things. We're probably going to experiment with a world's most wanted idea, which is to this summer we've caught and captured fugitives in Hong Kong, India, and in Canada, of course. And so we're really going to try with AMW.com. We now have a global reach, so we're going to try and do more with Interpol, do more on the terrorist front as well. To help track down some of these guys that could be hiding in other countries. So we're going to do a lot of that. We're also still going to go after our bread and butter, which are the worst of the worst in North America, the murderers, the rapists, and those who have decided that they need to be in the criminal justice system. And the message remains to be that they do need to be in the criminal justice system, and they can count on the fact that on Saturday nights we're going to go after them.
Well, 21 years, congratulations. It's AMW.com. Of course, the toll-free number is 1-800-CRIME-TV. John Lieberman, thank you. If you could just stay on the air for half a second, I want to talk to you.
Sure.
Okay, just hang on. We'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show. And we are back, and I want to thank all my guests this evening and remind you to check out our new webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. The show will be available for podcast. You can get it at iTunes or right at the webpage in an hour or two. And just to remind you, well, maybe not to remind you, but to announce, I will be doing a special show Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, and my guests for the hour will be Rita Cosby, formerly from Fox News and MSNBC. Rita Cosby will join me Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, and Rita and I have lots to talk about, so make sure you don't miss that one. It will be a good show. That's here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Again, our webpage, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Thank you. Without you, it wouldn't be much of a show. Have a good night, and we'll see you Thursday.